Shangdang song is a special menu and rarely found, which is made from duck meat as its main ingredient and wadung yang leaf that adds a unique sour taste. Wadung tree is many found and growing wild at the village. Besides giving sour taste, wadung leaf is also used to remove fishy smell from duck meat. The duck must be the big one, so it is usually used male duck for cooking geseng bangso. Besides wadung yang leaf, this culinary is also cooked with other spices such as cayenne, onion, and garlic. Geseng bangsong has savory and spicy taste. Spicy taste mixed with sour taste certainly produce delicious food. In Banyuwangi, the food is usually served when Islamic events being conducted, such as the birth of Prophet Muhammad, Eid al-Fitr, and Eid Adha. But now, geseng bangsong can be found at Witwitan Market every Sunday. The price of the food is affordable, which is around 20,000 rupiah to 25,000 rupiah per portion. In addition to taste geseng bangsong, you can also enjoy other typical culinaries of Banyuwangi, such as rawon alas, sego cawu, as well as traditional snake, such as tiwu and gatot, which is made from cassava. Well, listener, that was our segment of Indonesian Wonder for today. I'm Purisa Fredela. Thank you for listening.
is coming up shortly. Stay tuned with us, Voice of Indonesia.
Rasalami is a unique and typical food from Southeast Sulawesi, specifically in Buton, Muna, and Wakatobi areas. Kasalami is generally shaped like a tumpeng or cone and is yellowish white. Cassava, which is widely grown in the Sulawesi archipelago, is the main ingredient of kasalami. Firstly, the cassava is washed, peeled, and shredded or milled using a machine. Then the grated cassava is put in a sack or pot to be compacted. This compaction is to remove water content by being crushed or pressed using a tool made of wood or large stones. Then leave it for 1 to 3 hours until the water is completely dry. The solid is pure white. Next, the solid is wrapped in teak or banana leaves and tied. The solid is called kagepe. To make kasalami, initially kagepe is kneaded by hand until it looks like flour. Then the ingredients are put into a very unique steaming cone. This tool is made from woven coconut leaves. To steam the kagepe, they use a pot made of clay similar to a jar. The cone filled with kagepe flour is put into the mouth of the pot. Then it is cooked with medium heat and medium volume of water in a pot for about 15 minutes. One kasalami is generally made with a diameter of 10 cm and a height of 10 cm and weighs approximately 500 to 700 grams. Usually, a person can spend 1 to 2 kasalamis. Kasalami is sometimes served as a substitute for rice because it is often served along with vegetables and side dishes of various processed fish, such as grilled fish, fried fish, and salted fish. Kasalami is the initial food in Buton's traditional events. Interestingly, kasalami is also often used as stocks for trips or souvenirs between fellow Buton residents. Kasalami can be eaten without side dishes, accompanied by a cup of hot tea in the afternoon. The distinctive taste of cassava and the sweet blend of tea will add to this culinary delight.
Negara.
at NA Digital with New Look. Various collaborative content from various national programs, including live visual broadcast, live radio broadcast, music playlist, podcast, video news, and various users' interaction features in the game. Various interesting content such as live comments and shares, as well as live chat with broadcasters and users. Direct messaging and private chat facilities between app users are also available. RRE Digital, available on Google Store and App Store. RRE Digital.
Is one of the legendary Solo culinary delights because there are not many traders selling this culinary anymore. But you don't have to worry if you are already in Solo and want to taste this traditional culinary. Although it is a popular culinary delicacy in Solo, in certain places there are still traders selling this as compulsory products, such as in the Gede Market, Lawayan Market, and in the Manahan Field. As Kempol Peret is beverage because of its refreshing presentation, but there are also those who call it food because it is filling when enjoyed. The basic ingredients of this typical beverage are rice flour and glutinous rice flour. To make as Kempol Peret, we have to soak rice flour first. Then it is shaped into small balls like meatballs and then steamed. Therefore, some people call gempol as rice meatball because it is round, made of rice, and its white color. According to the story, gempol comes from the word jempol because it uses the fingers. It is also made from rice flour, which is made into dough and then formed into thin sheets resembling wonton. Afterwards, it is also steamed until cooked. Finally, for presentation, in a medium-sized bowl, the gempol peret is aided with coconut milk, which is made from thin coconut milk and sugar. You can add shaved ice or ice cubes that are broken into small pieces. As a variation, you can also add pieces of jackfruit or green sticky rice tapi. For one bowl of es kempol peret, you only need to pay 5,000 rupiah. It is quite affordable, isn't it?
Apakah mungkin aku ini sudah gila? Belum bertemu tapi sudah jatuh cinta. Saat tak sengaja melihat di sampul majalah yang tak pernah terpikirkan untuk ku baca. Tapi itulah cara cinta bekerja. Tanpa permisi dia datang tiba-tiba. Lalu ku putuskan untuk mencari tahu siapa dirimu. Dan masih mungkinkah aku tercuma itu juga jadi garis yang kan temani hari-hariku. Dan ku ingin cintanya menjadi sambul di hatiku. Yang ke depan aku selalu menjadi nomor satu. Yeah. Oh tapi siapakah diriku ini yang kata orang tak rupawan begini. Tak bisa asik bergaya dengan segala macam cara yang ada di anak muda masa kini. Tapi apa salahnya punya hayalan, harapan atau sekedar angan-angan. Lalu ku putuskan untuk mencari tahu siapa dirimu dan masih mungkinkah aku.
Australia just scored 1-0 through the penalty zone, and yes, there is still hope. It's just the 80 minutes of the match. There are still more to come from Indonesia, and I hope we just get a comeback. Just because after before that, Indonesia just got a chance to get a penalty but failed to do it. But yes, we're still here giving it hope for the Indonesia. So make sure to tune in with us, a Voice listener, in Indonesia today for the match of the upcoming Indonesia versus Australia live from Voice of Indonesia.
Because it has been known since ancient times that Galala village is a fish hunter. The basic ingredients of ikan asar are generally cakalang fish, yellowtail fish, or mackerel tuna fish, as long as the fish's texture is dense so that it is not brittle when smoked. Ikan asar is a smoked fish. This is smoked differently and uniquely. In general, the fish is smoked horizontally, but ikan asar is placed diagonally on the side of the embers that produce smoke to make the fish completely dry and fully cooked. The cooking process is quite simple. After cleaning the entrails, the fish is skewered with bamboo and ready to be smoked on the stove. The smoking takes about 4 until 5 hours and is done in a closed room so that the smoke soaks into the meat until it is completely cooked. Ikan asar has an extraordinary taste.
Voice listener, the Australia just scored another goal through a free kick zone in the match. So the score right now is 2-0. Australia is leading the lead right now, even though Indonesia still has hope. So make sure to always stay tuned, Voice listener, and hope the best for the Indonesian Garuda team to win this match and qualify for the next round of this cup. Listener, we are back with Salud right now live on the stadium. What do you think, Salud, with the 2-0 score from Australia striking goals in Indonesia in such a short time?
Shall I start to report about this one? Shall I start to report? Yeah. So if you can see here, so this is, I'm coming from the other side. So look at this, all Indonesian teams, the supporters. But we start in very good one. So actually in minute 2 and minute 4, we almost kind of like scoring. So just kind of like heading to the goalkeeper, it touched to the pole instead of go inside to the goal. Unfortunately, in minute 12 and minute 14, we got strike back from Australia. The first one was penalty. So it's, there was kind of like debate between jury and the player saying there is no penalty. But unfortunately, we have to give penalty to Australia. That's the first goal that's been made. And after that, 4 minutes after, we got strike back. So today is basically, we got until now, minute 25. So we got already 22 for Australia and 0 for Indonesia, unfortunately.
Is there any chance for the Indonesian team to do the comeback from this 2-0 deficit?
Yeah. Yes. So now it's almost kind of like almost every
couple of minutes. Okay, I don't think that he can hear me since the stadium is super loud right now. And let's hope for the best for the Indonesian team to catch up in this matchup of Indonesia versus Australia. And, of course, let's hope for the best always for the Garuda Indonesia.
akhirnya layarnya itu juga tiba di Sulawesi. Dan di sini pun layarnya diubah sedemikian rupa sehingga menjadi yang kita sekarang mengenali sebagai layar penis.
Indonesian people are challenged to become more resilient in facing life at sea. One of the communities that is able to run a shipping system and build ships is the Bulukumba community. However, the term Finisi became known in the 1950s.
Istilah Finisi itu secara umum baru muncul dalam apa namanya ya? Cetakan, koran, dan sebagainya. Pada tahun
the term Finisi generally only appeared in printing like newspapers and so on in the early 50s of the 20th century. In 1960, administration of the first Indonesian president, Soekarno, held a competition for boats to carry copra from Sulawesi to Jakarta. And in the newspaper, the question still arose about what Finisi boat is, because the term Finisi was not yet known to people at that time. Because in the fact, in the reports of harbor master and so on, boats like that were still called palari. There was palari tonggong, there was palari tonggong. The term Finisi started being known in the 80s, especially after the Finisi was brought to Vancouver. And there, the boats which were previously called palari were then called Finisi. So the term Finisi, which now we really take pride in, is actually a creation after the Finisi no longer existed.
Terutama setelah ada Finisi Nusantara yang dibawa ke Vancouver, dan di situ, di Singapura misalnya, pulau-pulau yang sebelumnya dinamakan Polari itu mulai dinamakan Finisi. Jadi, istilah Finisi yang sekarang ini begitu dibanggakan, sebenarnya sesuatu ciptaan setelah yang namanya Finisi itu sudah tidak ada lagi. Ini ingatan masyarakat tidak terlalu tepat. Ada cerita bahwa perahu yang seperti itu yang pertama kali dibangun di
Alai. People's memory are not very accurate and there are stories that the first such boat in Ara was in 1900. But no one remembers who built it, for whom, and so on. And until World War II, in the Dutch newspaper and the harbor master reports and so on, all projects like they were recorded as palari. So the use of the word Finisi is something new, something that hasn't been around for too long, but with the motor and Indonesian sailing boats, all of that disappeared in the 70s. This is a memory that people are quite proud of. When Finisi Nusantara was brought to Vancouver, and more travel companies from abroad ordered boats like that. The term Finisi was brought back as a proud memory of boat builders and sailors from the archipelago. The use of the word Finisi to generalize all types of boats is actually a deflation of Indonesia's boat manufacturing wealth, because in Indonesia there are hundreds of types of boats and they all have their own names.
Istilah Finisi itu diangkat kembali sebagai suatu ya ingatan kebanggaan pembuat perahu dan pelayar dari Ponto Bahari itu. Penggunaan kata Finisi untuk memukul rata semua jenis perahu itu sebenarnya suatu suatu deflasi kekayaan pembuatan perahu Indonesia, karena di Indonesia ada ratusan jenis perahu yang semua punya nama tersendiri.
Finisi became known worldwide since its first expedition to Vancouver, Canada in 1986, where one of the crew members is still sailing today.
Mungkin dari awal, waktu itu yang saya cerita tadi,
at that time, from the start, I remember it was in 85 when my team entered Kalangan. And then I said I wanted to come to Canada. I hadn't applied yet. Finally, after a long time, Mr. Felipe, a Frenchman, who was watching us as a witness to who accepted the people, and said that, you're going home, right? And at that time, many of others didn't come. I went first, so then
fire level.
He said, do you want to come to Canada? And I said, yes, sir. If you still need more people. And he said, you're not afraid of waves 8 to 9 meters. He said, the same to me. Then I said, in Indonesia, I've never seen 9 meters wave. I wanted to see it. We immediately shook hands, so it was a deal. At that time, I was on the machine and also on the hill. There were also 4 people from Tanah Biru also come with me. I asked you, this Navy man, how many meters are the waves? Oh, this is only 7 meters. How is the 10 meters one like? I said. Relying on 2 masts and 7 developed sails called Pinisi, the wind has been the main force for Indonesian sailors since the 12th century to sail to their destination.
Well, kalau kita berlayar itu main di layar aja.
If we sail, we just play with the sails according to the wind. Maybe there will be a change in the wind for several hours. Like here yesterday, sailing without wind for 2 hours could take one day because of the wind. Well, if you use an engine, you can calculate the speed and at what time we will arrive. Well, if we just play with the sails, we cannot predict when we will arrive.
Kapal Pinisi di Banyuwangi ini asalnya dari Arab, dulu pun Pak, Sulawesi Selatan.
The Pinisi ship was built originally from Arab in Sulawesi, starting from the year before independence in 1945. After independence, it already existed before. From generation to generation, we have been able to make this ship without any finished drawings. It has been passed down from our ancestors until now. We do it without any technical knowledge. It is just based on experience, and it is recognized throughout the world.
Tanpa ada bilang teknik bagaimana, dan di segi pengalaman saja. Nah, dia kuil dan seluruh dunia. Kalau dengan pensinya 1 tahun lebih. Tapi kali ini kami bikin di pantai dia, pantai Anjuran.
With the Pinisi, it took more than a year. But this time we make it on the Losari Beach. It is the fastest one because in just 2 months and a half has been like this with 2 units, with 25 people working. Yes, iron wood, PT wood, and teak wood. It only needs 3 types of wood in terms of its strength. In the sea, you can make just any kinds of wood. I used to have finished it made from BT wood, but the scarcity of BT wood forced me to use it only for the ship films. Now I cannot do it anymore. The deck is made of
BT wood. Sekarang tidak bisa lagi karena sudah berkurang. Bisa untuk pasir tulang. Deknya ini kayu jati. Alinas, papan sil papannya disusun, pasir tulang.
The shoots, the planks are arranged one by one. Then they go up here. After the body is finished, then the tusks are installed. Once the tusks are installed, the road is installed, the bottom is then the gutter, then the floor, then the room. The room has all the walls and partitions made. After this, it has been put on the hub. This is lowered, then the mast is made. The mast is then put on the post room. The master than the sail is put on.
Tali sering, tali tian. Nak buatan baru pasang layarnya. Begitu.
The system and calculation for making Pinisi sailing ships has been known to people of Arab village Bulukumba since 19th century. However, according to a research conducted by German historian Horst Lippner, only 12 Limo-Limo people knew the shipbuilding system. The system is named Tatatalu.
Itu dari rumusnya begini. Kita ini ahli
that's the formula. So this is how we are ship's expert, Wandi Talupi. The important thing is that we know the length, weight and height, that this is 6 meters, the length is 30 meters, the height is 3 meters. They keep installing it and then it will be right when it hits 6 meters. Indeed, we already have experience in that aspect, without saying that it is balanced. It is already balanced because it is our technique, our experience, so that it is precise up to 6 meters without any writing approximately or so. Each one works, each one is an expert.
Ada satu hal dan itu intinya dari warisan dunia itu, yaitu.
There is one thing that is absent from world heritage, namely what we can call the formula for making it. Many people say that those are made without drawings and so on, and that is actually not true. There is a formula that is not made into a drawing, but made into various sizes which are recorded above the gauge. There are various bangli that are used with signs that determine the measurement, for example, the location of the pegs in the hull, the length of the planks, the location of the frame, and so on. Those who will still inherit this knowledge today are the descendants of the Lemu-Lemu people. It seems to have a formula called Kasapalu, which can produce boats up to 14 meter long. Kielan boats, or whatever boats were called Pinisi in the 70s, were much bigger. So there is an impression that the Ara people at some point in 1930s to 1950s created a new manufacturing formula called Kapa'apa, which could produce larger boats.
Jadi ada kesan bahawa orang Arab pada suatu saat tahun 1930-an sampai 50-an menciptakan satu rumus pembuatan yang baru yang dinamakan tata apa yang bisa menghasilkan perahu yang lebih besar. Membangun suatu perahu itu adalah suatu hal yang sangat-sangat rumit. Secara populer, perahu layar itu diakui sebagai benda pertama.
Building a boat is very, very complicated thing. Popularly, the sailboat is recognized as the most complicated human creation that has existed before the Industrial Revolution in the 18th century. This means that throughout human history, nothing more complicated has been built than a sailboat. If we compare the parts of number of objects in this boat, whatever there is, as far as I know, is 100 tons more than a cell phone. And they all have to function the same as cell phone. If you install one small part wrongly, the cell phone won't work. It's the same as if boat is installed incorrectly. One small part of the boat will not fail. And there is another point there. Boat is not something rectangular, but it's created through a curve. The curve must be harmonious. If the curve is crooked, the boat will not fail. Maybe someone remembers in high school we are taught how to calculate the curve as from X, which is the most complicated, right? Maybe those who have gone through it have all said, well, this is very difficult, but the boat can only function if the curve is harmonious. The curve can be calculated in that way. So the knowledge to create curves has been going on in the archaeology for 1,000 years, and the way of conceptualizing curves is not much different from shipwrecks from the 10th century to boats built in the mid-20th century. These things are very complicated, so they are not for public consumption because they are too complicated. But in order to deepen them and make them something to be proud of, things like that should be made more public, put forward more to the general public so that they are not reduced to only Pinisi.
Mengkonsepkan kurva-kurva itu tidak jauh berbeda dari kapal-kapal kanan yang dari awal ke-10 dengan perahu-perahu yang dibangun pada pertengahan abad ke-20. Hal itu amat-amat rumit. Sebenarnya bukan menjadi ini barang konsumsi halaya kerana, wah, memang terlalu rumit. Tetapi untuk apa ya? Memperdalamnya dan menjadikannya sesuatu yang bisa dibanggakan. Hal-hal seperti itu semestinya memang lebih diumumkan, lebih di kedepankan kepada khalayak ramai, supaya itu tidak direduksi atas ini situ.
For no reason. Have you ever thought that I want a trainee to live? I am what animals need to reproduce. I am what humans need to survive. Yes, I am water. Save me so that the earth and its content can continue to be sustainable.
Of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world. You can listen to us on voinews.id, RRI Digital, and our shortwave broadcast on 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz. Right now, you are listening to Highlights of the Week, presenting you events that happened in Indonesia for this week. The Indonesian Minister of Health, Budi Gunadi, outlined the free health check program launched on February 10th. During a coordination meeting on inflation control for 2025 held on Monday, Minister Budi explained that this program is the largest ever undertaken by the Ministry of Health. It targets covering the entire population of Indonesia, reaching 280 million people.
Program ini adalah program terbesar.
This program is the largest ever run by the Ministry of Health, considering its reach to 280 million Indonesians. If we compare it in the past, the ministry had programs such as stunting that reached 25 million children. The immunization program targeted 80 million people. The free nutritious meals program covered 83 million. And the COVID-19 vaccination campaign reached 200 million. This is the largest program in the history of the Ministry of Health, reaching 280 million people annually.
Budi Gunadi also explained that the health checks cover various age groups from infants, toddlers and school children to the elderly to optimize implementation. The checks are carried out at health centers and schools. As of mid-March, almost 800,000 people have registered for the free health check program. The Ministry of Health aims to increase the number of participants to 100 million people annually in the coming years. President Prabowo Subianto and ministers discussed speeding up downstream industries to create jobs and promote balanced economic growth in Indonesia. Ofra has the details.
President Prabowo Subianto led a limited meeting with several ministers from the Merah Putih Cabinet in Hambalang, Bogor Regency on Sunday. The meeting focused on speeding up downstream industries in key sectors, ensuring that these projects bring real benefits in terms of job creation and equal economic growth across Indonesia. Minister of Investment and Downstream Industries, Head of Investment Coordinating Board Rosan Ruslani, explained that they, together with related ministries, have identified various downstream projects in sectors like minerals, coal, aquaculture, agriculture, and plantations. These projects are being analyzed thoroughly to prioritize those that will bring the most benefits to the economy and people's welfare.
We prioritize projects that create jobs. This is a key factor we focus on. We also look at their economic impact, job creation, reducing import and increasing export.
Rosan also emphasized President Prabowo's directions that downstream industries should not stop at the initial stage, but should serve as a gateway to broader industrialization. This will ensure that the acceleration of downstream industries leads to sustainable economic growth in Indonesia.
Indonesia involves NGOs in plan to build maternity and child hospital in Gaza. More details are provided by Andi Romdoni.
The Indonesian government through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs officially announced the plan for the hospital in Gaza, Palestine. The project will involve several sectors including the AXA Working Group NGO, which has been driving this initiative since October. Presidium of the AXA Working Group Rifa Berliana Arifin on Monday stated that the maternity and child hospital plan for Gaza will rely only on assistance from Indonesia, including contributions from both the government and the public. He highlighted that this hospital will be a special initiative as it is a project originating from Indonesia.
The only partner for this project is Indonesian people. We don't accept any part from the other countries. Because we want to make this project special, this from the heart of Indonesia to people in Gaza. So that we declared in the beginning that we cannot take or receive any donation or any work from the other countries. So any Indonesian who eager to help and feel like our brother and sister in Gaza need something like medical assistance for the a long time, so they can join this project, maybe as a donor or as a team. We call also from Indonesian doctors, engineers, many profile from our side to contribute for this project.
Rifa Berliana Arifin further explained that they are in the process of coordinating with the government of Egypt and Palestine to secure permission to enter Gaza. He also mentioned that once the hospital is established, they plan to send 5 construction experts and 100 medical personnel to assist with the development of Gaza's healthcare sector.
In the meantime, Indonesia's maternity and child hospital in Gaza will rely only on domestic support. Again, Andi Ramdoni reports.
The Indonesian government has announced plans to build a maternity and child hospital in Gaza, Palestine, to support the community there in the aftermath of the war. Ahrul Sani Faturrahman, director of the Middle East at the Indonesian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, stated that this initiative is part of Indonesia's commitment to supporting reconstruction efforts in Gaza, which has been devastated by war. On Monday, March 17, 2025, Ahrul Sani reiterated Indonesia's commitment to helping rebuild Gaza. The Indonesian government officially announced the plan to build the maternity and child hospital in Gaza on Friday. Speaking during the Voice Talk program on RRI Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, Ahrul Sani explained that the project would involve various sectors of society addressing the urgent need for healthcare development in the region.
So we're getting the plan for reconstruction of Indonesian mother and child hospital in Gaza City. Actually, this is the direction from our cooperation and collaboration between the government and the Indonesian NGOs. In this case, the AFSA working group, how we can provide a humanitarian assistance for our brothers in Palestine, especially in Gaza, which we know that the health sector there is collapsed. So I think part of our assistance is how we can rebuild the health sector there by building the hospital and especially for mother and child.
Ahrul Sani further noted that the Indonesian government, through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, is committed to facilitating the implementation of this program, especially considering the ongoing instability in Gaza.
From our side, of course, we will use all of our diplomatic channels to speak with the Palestinian authorities in Gaza and also in the West Bank, also other countries neighbors to Palestine, like Egypt, and because to Gaza. Only can reach to Egypt and to Jordan, with to Jordan also.
Earlier, Indonesia launched the Indonesia for Palestine National Campaign, which demonstrates its strong commitment to supporting Palestine's cause. Ahrul Sani mentioned that the campaign involves dozens of NGOs actively engaged in humanitarian efforts. He added that Indonesia continues to show its support in various international forums, including providing human resources training, economic development programs, and scholarships for the people.